Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 19, the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha, text 38. Etan mahapunyamalang pavitrang danyang yasasyang paramaya sisang pranendriya sauryavardhanam Narayanon te gati anga shinvatam etan mahapunyamalang pavitram danyang yashasyam paramaya shishyam pranendriyanam yudhi sauryavardhanam Narayanon te gati anga shrinvatam etan mahapunyamalang pavitram danyang yasasyang paramaya shisham pranendriyanam yudhi sauryavardhanam Narayanon te gati anga shinvatam. Etat, this narrative. Mahapunyam, conferring great merit. Alam, very. Pavittam, sacred. Danyam, conferring wealth. Yashasham, bearing fame. Param, the receptacle. Ayu, of longevity. Ashasham, of the objects of one's desire. Prana, of the vital organs. Indriyanam, of the organs of action. Yudhi, on the field of battle. Shaurya, the strength. Vardhanam, increasing. Narayana, Lord Narayan. Ante, at the end of life. Gati, shelter. Anga, O dear Shonaka. Shrinvatam, of those who listen. Translation. This most sacred narrative confers extraordinary merit, wealth, fame, longevity, and all the objects of one's desire. On the field of battle, it promotes the strength of one's vital organs and organs of action. One who listens to it at the last moment of his life, is transferred to supreme abode of the Lord, O dear Shonaka. Purport. Srila Prabhupada. Devotees are generally attracted by the narratives of the pastimes of the Lord. And even though they do not prosecute austerities or meditation, this very process of hearing attentively about the pastimes of the Lord will endow them with innumerable benefits, such as wealth, fame, longevity, and other desirable aims of life. If one continues to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of narratives of the pastimes of the Lord, at the end of this life, one is sure to be transferred to the eternal transcendental abode of the Lord. Thus, hearers are benefited both ultimately and for as long as they are in the material world. That is the supreme, sublime result of engaging in devotional service. The beginning of devotional service is to spare some time and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam from the right source. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also recommended 5 items of devotional service, namely to serve the devotees of the Lord, to chant Hare Krishna, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, to worship the deity of the Lord, and to live in a place of pilgrimage. Just performing these 5 activities can deliver one from the miserable condition of material life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 3rd canto, 19th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha. Om Gyana Timidandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Often at the end of chapters in Srimad Bhagavatam, there'll be a benediction given by the Vaishnav speaker. Because Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is full of blessings. It's full of rewards that we don't even deserve. Just by hearing about Krishna, everything in your life improves. And to help us understand that, here we have enumerated all the things that can happen to your life just by hearing about Krishna. We should not underestimate the potency of the hearing process. This verse says, Shrinvatam, of those who listen. In the 1st canto of Bhagavatam, it is revealed how the Lord acts mystically in your heart just because you've chosen to hear about Him. Shrinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantasto Hibhadrani Vidunoti Sahitsatam. Krishna is not inactive in your heart. He's working so that we'll go back to Godhead. In the beginning, we may not notice this, but nevertheless, Krishna is reciprocating. Oh, you have decided to spare some time to hear about me. I'll reciprocate by cleansing the desire for material enjoyment from your heart. Now, we shouldn't be afraid of that. We should understand that the desire for material enjoyment is what's causing all the problems. One definition of maya that Srila Prabhupada gives is very nice to remember. Of course, all his definitions are nice to remember, but this gives you insight into another aspect of what it means to live in the material world. Prabhupada said that maya means making plans to be materially happy. Obviously, the New Agers aren't going to appreciate that definition very much. But the nature of illusion is, I shall plan to be happy in this world. Prahlad Maharaj says, as soon as you do that, that's where your suffering begins. Not simply in the stage of gross action, but right there at the seed stage of your initial plan, that's when your misery begins. Now, if you start to hear about Krishna, the Lord wants to do things for you. And His first installment of mercy is that He'll begin cleaning the desire for material enjoyment from your heart, and you'll be able to be more peaceful in devotional service. That's why it's very important for devotees to have a keen attitude about hearing the glories of the Lord. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya explains that there are 5 principal limbs of devotional service, which Prabhupada lists in his purport. Serving the devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, and living in a place of pilgrimage. These 5 things, in particular, bring about ecstatic love of Krishna. In fact, Mahaprabhu explains that these 5 principal limbs of devotional service are so extraordinary that even if you do one of them, the result will be there. Now just see the program that Prabhupada has given us. He's given us a program that accommodates all five. So how can we lose? Yes, we can lose by taking for granted what we've been given. We can lose by becoming familiar with the process of bhakti and thinking, I know all about it, or I've done it for so long. If we want to make spiritual progress, then we're always trying to engineer our life for increased hearing about Krishna, appreciating all the pastimes of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada gave us appreciation for everything that Krishna does, all the leelas. Just like now you're hearing about Lord Boar, Adi Shukra, the original Boar, killing Hiranyaksha. This is not for neophytes. It's not that soon you'll get tired of hearing about Lord Boar and you'll move on to something higher. Prabhupada would get very angry when anyone would suggest that. He wanted his devotees to understand the complete picture of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then naturally, in the advanced stage, your natural proclivity for a particular form of the Lord and particular pastimes of the Lord will come out. Certainly Prabhupada had that, but still, he had no hesitation in speaking with enthusiasm about anything that any incarnation of the Lord did. He never told us, well, this one's higher, this one's lower. He relished everything and gave us that understanding that we should relish the complete picture of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whether Krishna is dancing with the gopis in the forest or he's killing. We're not ashamed of Krishna's killing leelas. I think I explained some years ago how Prabhupada was once walking around Vrindavan and he was asking the devotees, oh, what is the highest pleasure in the material world? And of course, you know what the devotees said, especially Western devotees. They've had enough unfortunate experience. So, you know, well, no doubt a doubt, Prabhupada, you know, the sex life is supposed to be, you know, the highest pleasure in the material world. And Prabhupada said, well, not actually, there's something else. So everyone was like, spellbound. There's something else? Something higher than that? And Prabhupada said, yes, the actual highest pleasure in the material world is killing. Now, how can that be? Because you, from the material point of view, you get such distorted pleasure by snuffing out someone's life. You get to feel that you are the controller, you are the the almighty. It's like a supreme manifestation of envy. Sex desire is also a manifestation of envy. I'll use someone's body to satisfy my desires. Similarly, killing. I will put out someone's life. What a thrill. You can feel like you're the annihilator. So, yes, this is perverse pleasure. But when Krishna kills, we glorify those activities. In fact, we become purified by hearing about Krishna's killing. Because whatever Krishna does with anyone, the person benefits. That is God. Om apavitra pavitrova savavastam katopiva. Yasmadat pundarikaksham. What is the nature of this pundarikaksha, this lotus-eyed Lord? That no matter what kind of situation you're in, you'll be benefited by contact with Krishna. Whether you're conditioned, whether you're liberated, whether you're on the material platform, whether you're on the spiritual platform, purified, unpurified, if you simply come in contact with Krishna, his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, you'll benefit. And that means even his killing pastimes. Devotees are very eager to understand everything that Krishna does. When you care for someone, even in the ordinary sense, you want to relish everything that that person does. You can see sometimes parents with little children. The child can do the silliest little thing and the parents are relishing. They're appreciating. The child just says a few broken words and the parents take great delight. They take the child to the park and the child climbs up on this and then climbs down again and the parents are watching completely spellbound. So, if we can have that material tendency, how much more we should have that tendency in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Krishna kills, whether it's here in Yaksha or whatever demon, we relish the details. Krishna's wars are not ordinary. People today, they're wanting to focus on the war details, whether they're for the war or against the war. They're studying the situation. There's opinions. The newspapers are presenting. You know, this one says this. This one has an opposing view. Keeping everyone's consciousness full of this mundane information. But if we hear about Krishna's killing, we'll not become implicated in the modes of material nature. In fact, we'll become free from the modes of material nature. Mundane wars, as we heard Prabhupada say Sunday, mean this politician is envious of that politician, and therefore so many people have to suffer. Underneath all the superficial reasons is the fact that people have karma that they have to experience. We were explaining Sunday at the feast how now that tapes have been released from the White House of the former presidents, the people get to hear what the presidents are discussing and how they're feeling. So even in 1965, President Johnson was telling his wife, oh, I don't know what to do about this Vietnam War. I'm no battlefield general. His advisors were telling him, well, we don't know. You know, I guess the only solution they told the president was commit 600,000 more men. So Johnson was saying, I feel like a guy flying in an airplane that's about to crash. I can either choose to crash with the plane or jump out, and I don't have a parachute. He said like that. Anyway, the next day, 600,000 men called up. This is what goes on. And then the tapes of Nixon in the White House, they also come out recently. And this was like 7 years later. And still the battle is going on. It's not resolved in Vietnam. What does Nixon say? We're going on. I'm not going to be the first American president to lose a war. In this way, so much suffering is there because of envy and prestige. And the deeper reason is people have to experience their karma. This went on during the time of Krishna, such envy and false prestige. After Kamsa was killed, his widows were very distressed, as a woman would be upon losing a husband she's attached to. So the two wives of Kamsa went back to their father, as is the Vedic system, and they complained bitterly, Krishna has killed our husband. Now remember, Krishna mercifully had performed the funeral ceremony for Kamsa. He had killed Kamsa and then very charitably proposed to Kamsa's wives, I shall perform his funeral ceremony. This is how bold Krishna is. I always point out, you can't imagine someone killed your husband or wife and then says, would you like me to perform the funeral ceremony? But that is Krishna. He's perfect and complete. I killed your husband. Now I offer to perform the funeral ceremony. So he did it. And then the wives of Kamsa, the widows, they went back to their father and told him, oh, Krishna's killed our husband. You can just imagine what the scene was. So Jarasandha got so angry. What a horrible thing. And he made a vow. I'm going to wipe out all the Jews. I'm going to get revenge, retribution. They did this to me, I'll do this to them. Therefore, war. Jarasandha gathered around him 23 Akshahini divisions. One Akshahini division is about 200,000 of various types of soldiers. Foot soldiers, chariot soldiers, horse fighters, elephant fighters. So he had 23 of those divisions. That means about 4.5 million troops. Now, sometimes people say, oh, this must be an exaggeration. But when they hear that the president called up 600,000 men overnight, you know, to go to Vietnam, oh, that's understandable. That's all rational. But when we hear, you know, Jacinda had 23 Oksahini visions, well, this is the exaggeration of the Shastra. This is how jaded our mind becomes under the influence of Maya. Anything that happens in the material world, we'll accept. And we don't even really know what's going on. We're ready to accept it. Krishna Leela is being presented to you by the greatest personalities in existence, and we have doubts. This is our misfortune. So, Jacinda gathered his armies and marched on Mathura. So, Krishna knew what was going on. He could see that this is a very fearful situation for the residents of Mathura. What did he do? It's not that Krishna has to deliberate and come to a conclusion, but in his Naralila, in his pastimes as a human being, he likes to enjoy deliberating and making strategy, thinking, how to handle this situation. It's a way of enjoying, although the Lord is omniscient. More than his omniscience is his enjoying ability. So he enjoys first, even beyond his knowing everything. So sometimes Krishna likes to solve a puzzle, have a bit of suspense about what he's going to do. He began to think. Now, here is Jacinda with his huge army. What is my mission? Krishna began to reflect on his mission statement. He's the best manager, so he wants to make sure he's in touch with his goals. He began to review his purpose, according to the Bhagavatam. He began thinking, I come here in order to annihilate the miscreants and establish the devotees. I do that by coming in different forms at various times. Now, what is the proper thing for me to do in these particular, in this particular situation according to the time, place, and circumstance? What should I do? Now, the situation that Krishna specifically had to think about was, okay, number one, should I kill Jacinda? Number two, should I kill his armies? Or number three, should I kill them all? This is God. He's deliberating like this. How much killing should I do? And the devotees relish this. We don't feel ashamed. Krishna's thinking about killing. No, we develop ecstatic symptoms just by hearing Krishna's killing meditation. Because whatever the Lord does is purifying. Whether he's dancing with the gopis or killing on the battlefield. So, Krishna thought that actually I have no desire to be the king of Magadha. That's the present Bihar in India. So why should I kill Jacinda when I don't want to take his place as the leader of his government? In other words, he had no desire to take over that place. So he said, why should I kill him? People have to have a king. They have to have a leader. I don't want to do the job. So he began to think another way. This shows you something about Vedic civilization. The Kshatriyas understood that if they kill another leader, they become responsible for that leader's government for taking care of the people. So Krishna didn't want any more responsibility in that way. So he said, maybe I shouldn't kill him because then I'll have to be responsible for leading people in his land. I don't want it. So he had another thought. Now, my mission, when I reflect upon my mission statement is that I come to the world to annihilate the miscreants. Jacinda is going to make it easy for me. If I kill his armies and let him live, he's such a fool, he'll go back and gather another army of equal strength and bring it right to me, and I can kill all the soldiers, and he'll keep doing it again and again. In this way, very conveniently, I'll relieve the world of its military burden. What does military burden mean? It means when so much manpower and money is spent on armaments. This is against Dharma. This is a sinful situation. So Krishna wanted to dispose of so much military buildup. So he said, okay, Jacinda is making my plans very convenient. I'll kill all the 4.5 million soldiers, and he's so stubborn, he'll go back, raise another army, and march on Mathura again. So I will go through the same thing. Time after time. Now, while Krishna was thinking like that. Because whatever Krishna thinks immediately can happen. Sabhava ki jnana bala kriya cha, the Upanishads say. His strength, his knowledge, his activities manifest in perfect sequence. There's no like gap between, well, let me think, and now I have to struggle to put into action my plans. No. Krishna's thinking and acting is all simultaneous. There's no struggle in between the two stages. There's no gap. His desire happens. So while Krishna's thinking like that, two chariots descend from Vaikuntha armed with weapons. So Krishna turns to Balaram and he says, my dear brother, Prabhu, Lord of the universe, just see the situation in Mathura. The people are fearful. Just see these chariots with weapons. You know what to do. Let us together rid the world of unnecessary military strength. So then Krishna and Balaram ride outside of Mathura in their chariots with just a small military force against a huge army of 4.5 million soldiers. All the residents of Mathura are waiting in suspense. The ladies are, they got up on top of the buildings to watch, not so much the battle. The ladies were interested in the battles per se. They're interested in looking at Krishna because he's the reservoir of all beauty. Jarasandha attacks his soldiers, far outnumber Krishna's soldiers, so it appears like clouds of dust are covering the sun. The attack by Jarasandha was so comprehensive and so pervasive that the residents of Mathura lost sight of Krishna amidst the attack. It became so dramatic and so tense that the ladies who were watching from the rooftops fainted upon losing sight of their beautiful Lord. In the face of such a mighty attack, Krishna began to start a killing drive that has just never been repeated. Just single-handedly, he began shooting arrows. Single-handedly. Shooting them so fast, it was like a wheel of blazing fire. And he took off the heads of all the elephants, the horses. He took off the limbs of all the soldiers in Jarasandha's army. He shattered their chariots. One Krishna against 4.5 million soldiers. The killing was so intense, the Shastra describes, a river of blood was flowing. And particularly we get the details of that river of blood. And you're meant to relish these details. It's not simply that, you know, you're in the groves of Vrindavan smelling the aroma of the jasmine and the mallika flowers and you're meditating on the moon smeared red by the eastern horizon. And no, if you're going to relish that properly, you also have to relish this killing scene of this battle. The Lord's killing prowess. If you have no taste for that, you don't have a proper taste for Rasa Leela. So you should meditate on those details. I know sometimes when I speak about this Leela, particularly sometimes the ladies, they really just kind of, when you start talking about the river of blood with all the different bodily parts, this is all Krishna Leela. This is Krishna's beauty in killing. Anyone who comes near Krishna becomes purified. So we shouldn't become hesitant about these pastimes. A devotee appreciates everything that the Supreme Lord does. So this huge river of blood is flowing with severed heads. The Shastra describes that the arms of the human beings were like serpents in the river of blood, the severed arms. Their heads, the human heads, were like turtles. And the heads of the elephants were like islands. And the dead bodies of horses were like crocodiles and sharks. And then there were clumps of seaweed in this river of blood. Those clumps of seaweed were actually human hair. And then scattered throughout the whole gushing river of blood were pebbles and stones, which are actually jewels from the bodies of the dead soldiers. So in this way, it was such a ghastly scene of transcendental beauty because Krishna had done this single-handedly. But it wasn't over then. Now it was time for Balaram. Balaram got to work, and he made the river of blood overflow. Now, you're meant to feel the ecstasy in your heart hearing this, what Krishna and Balaram did. Finally, everyone was dead, and there was such devastation around, such annihilation, such a scene of slaughter that the Shastra says you would might even find it unbelievable how much destruction there was caused by Krishna. But then Shukadeva Goswami says, why should you be incredulous about this? This is just creation, maintenance, and annihilation. What's the big deal for Krishna? If he can annihilate all the universes, he can certainly cause a huge river of blood with all sorts of bodily parts flooding everywhere. There's nothing so surprising about this. Finally, only Jarasandha was left. And so Balaram arrested him, ready to do him in. But Krishna said, no, we're going to let him go. Let him go back. And this way they humiliated the Kshatriya Jarasandha, who, for Kshatriya, better die than go home defeated. So Jarasandha, he had an idea, okay, that's it. I've really been ruined. I've been humiliated. I'm just going to go to the forest and perform austerities, forget all this government stuff. I'm renouncing my post. But the power of association is very strong. Jarasandha's friends, on the way back home from the defeat, they met him and told him, look, you know, you're just a bit unlucky fighting Krishna. You actually fought very valiantly. There was no fault in what you did. Simply it was because of your karma, a fluke defeat because of karma. And Jarasandha listened. Ah, yes, very true. And he went and raised up another army. 17 times he did this. This is determination. That's why in the 7th canon of Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says, if I could only love Krishna as much as these demons hated him, with that kind of intensity, I'd be spiritually perfect in no time. Just think about that. 17 times he went through this. And 17 times Krishna and Balaram made a river of blood full of severed limbs and heads flooding all over the land. So devotees get purified by hearing about this, just like they get purified by hearing about Krishna's intimate leelas. But finally, one point. It does say at the end of the Rasa Leela chapter, Shukadeva Goswami says, anyone who properly hears about Rasa Leela will become free from lust. Now, does that mean that anyone, any kind of devotee in any situation or frame of consciousness can start reading Rasa Leela and then everything will be all right? No. Prabhupada told us here in Los Angeles that that cure offered by Shukadeva Goswami is certain, but you have to be qualified to accept that medicine. He said, if you think prematurely, or if you try to take that medicine prematurely, you will not get purified by hearing Rasa Leela. You'll become putrefied. So in other words, you need to develop the qualifications to take the medicine that Shukadeva Goswami offered, that by hearing Rasa Leela, you'll be free from lust. It's not that anybody can just come along and take advantage of that medicine. No, you have to be properly prepared. And Prabhupada insisted that part of the proper preparation to take Shukadeva Goswami's cure of Rasa Leela for curing lust is that you appreciate with relish all the pastimes of the Lord, even his killing of the demons, even his causing rivers of blood to overflow with severed heads and arms and hair floating like clumps of seaweed. A devotee relishes everything that Krishna does and becomes purified. And in this way, because of eagerness to hear everything that Krishna does, the devotee's life becomes full of spiritual opulences. Any questions? Yes?
Cannot say then only as actually politicians are not so relevant is absolute. Only as it's also an absolute level. And we also listen just the story about him, he knows he cannot be related such that.
Yes, but particularly when one gets to an advanced stage, Shukadeva Goswami has given the benediction. Hearing about Rasa Leela, Krishna's romantic affairs, will cleanse you of your inclination for your own passionate affairs. Krishna's passion, of course, is antiseptic. So antiseptic that you'll become pure by hearing about Krishna's passion. But if you hear about someone else's passion, you'll get worse. So Krishna is there in all his activities. Still, there are particular flavors and there are particular benedictions. But you cannot go wrong with hearing about anything that Krishna does. In fact, you have to hear about everything that Krishna does. Otherwise, you won't be able to benefit fully from hearing Rasa Leela. Anything else? Yes.
There is something in the good way of Bhima. Both well and Bhima.
What was the second thing? It's a detailed question. You read Mahabharata, you'll probably find the answer. One final point. You see, it's hard for us to understand, even in the battle of Kurukshetra. Duryodhan, his side, and the Pandavas all thought, we can take better care of the citizens. Therefore, we want the other guys out, or let's keep the Pandavas out, or let's kick out Duryodhan. It wasn't simply for prestige. That was there because they're Kshatriyas. But there's something else which is hard for us to understand in Kali Yuga. On both sides of the Kurukshetra war, the soldiers were thinking, I can take care of the citizens better. This shows you the difference between real leaders and even Duryodhana. Prabhupada said Duryodhana and company were materially competent. They just had one problem. They were against Krishna. But from the material point of view, they were expert leaders and administrators. And so they were thinking, you know, besides wanting to be king, we can actually do a better job of maintaining the citizens than can the Pandavas. And the Pandavas were thinking, you know, we can rule better than these guys in that we'll care for the people better. So this is a completely different psychology in the Vedic war system. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.